This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
There's 5 or 10 minutes now if you would like to engage in any of the points that you've heard from Anthony and Julie. I mean, you're both talking about threshold standards, and in an era where we're into sort of 9,000 and much higher expectations, I mean, is a threshold going to be a sort of meaningful concept? Is anybody going to... Aren't they just going to assume that there's a sort of baseline, much as the politicians did in that Dias report, and want a lot more?
I think that certainly they will want more and should want more. I think we should all want more. That's why I think I do find a rather reductionist approach to quality assurance, which emphasises only its regulatory aspect and not its basis for improvement, as one which I think is not only, if you like, flawed as in principle, but is actually not suited for the era which the increased tuition fees or student contribution is bringing very sharply into focus. So, absolutely. I mean, I think the evidence around the Select Committee was that there was significant public uncertainty. You can argue about on what evidence base, but there was significant public uncertainty about even the achievement of threshold standards. So we've kind of got to get that right, and we've got to have a way of explaining to the world outside higher education that although institutions are autonomous and rightly, you know, set their own standards, they don't do that in isolation. They do it in a context which itself is the product of work across the sector with significant contributions from those who receive graduates, such as the professional bodies. But no, I mean, I think the threshold is just the beginning. But why I prefer the word threshold to minimum, because threshold suggests you're stepping over towards something else. Yeah. I do find the word minimum particularly depressing, really, and that any of us would be satisfied with that, I think, would be completely inadequate. Yeah.
And the MPs wanted more than that, as you said in your presentation. I mean, they want it to be the same everywhere.
Well, they want to, yes, I think that's the danger of going the other direction, where you say you want the same everywhere, because then I think you actually, the danger there is that you kill what, after all, on most measures, is a highly successful higher education system, whose very energy and success and dynamism comes from the fact that, you know, we don't have a state-imposed national curriculum for higher education. So, you know, absolutely not want to go in that direction. It's a way of finding how we can reassure and be positive about the strengths that the system has there.
Indeed. And Julie, you were talking about the perverse outcomes in some cases of the student experience data. I mean, what are those? I mean, I can see that students might want a different thing by feedback to what the university means, perhaps.
I think the key to all of this is that the students, the universities have got to work with the students on all of these kind of enhancement agendas. So all of the things that Anthony was saying earlier about students being part of the new audit regime, I'd really welcome, because I think unless we do that, we are in a situation where students are slightly outside of the situation, saying I'm not satisfied because of A, B and C, and then universities worrying that will put them at the bottom of some kind of league table, so kind of jumping in into doing things which at the end of the day, you know, haven't got that kind of depth, haven't got the engagement of the students. That can be a kind of surface approach. You know, we talk about deep and surface learning in terms of students, and I think the universities need to do that as well. So and the only way to do that, I think, is to involve the students. So that, for example, if we take feedback, we've got to have that dialogue with students about what it means, because otherwise we are stuck in a, I want it quick, well, here you are, then you get it quick. But, you know, is it worthwhile? So for me, I think all of these enhancement activities have got to involve students, because partly we're teaching the students to better understand their learning environment. I mean, I don't want that to sound patronising, but the students might not necessarily know.
No, indeed. Just can I hang on for the microphone?
Anthony, I'm interested. I'm really pleased to see the idea of enhancement being singled out, amongst other things, within the process. Have you had a chance to think through the implications of that? Because if we take enhancement as being incremental steps to improve, if an institution is commended for its enhancement in one cycle, but then rests on its laurels and does nothing further, will it still be commended for its enhancement in the next cycle, or will that become the new threshold for that institution?
That's a very good point, and I think it must relate to the fact that...
Yes, yeah, small steps.
I think it must relate to the fact that improvement and enhancement are of essence dynamic processes. So by definition, an enhancement, which a form of enhancement that remains static, ceases after a period of time to become enhancement. And I think that has to be reflected. I think that it might be perfectly possible for what is genuinely innovative, groundbreaking, even at an institution at a particular point, to become. I mean, actually, in a way, one would wish it to become much more widespread, much more common, and to begin to set a new benchmark. At which point, you know, the kind of reflective practitioners that Julie is dedicated to stimulating, so to speak, you know, want to move forward again. So. I think that's an important part of it, and we again mustn't be satisfied with, in a sense, reaching a level and then saying, well, that's it.
Ryan, yes, do you want to continue?
Just add something too, because I think one of the concerns that people like myself, in my kind of role, CEDA members have, is that some of our work, or lots of our work, is kind of dialogic and processual rather than outcome-driven. So I could spend a lot of time working with academic teams to become more reflective practitioners. And then the outcome of that might take a while to come through. So going back to what Craig earlier said this morning about the kind of linkage between the work on teaching and learning and then how it's experienced by the students, that link is very, very difficult, I think. The students might also experience it as quite challenging, an innovative, wacky new thing. They might not like that. No. They might be asking for more lectures, more seminars, more, you know, I want more essays. I mean, I've interviewed hundreds of students who say, I want more exams. I don't want all this funny e-portfolio stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think it's not as unproblematic as it sure. might seem.
Good. Well, we're up to time for this session. We won't have long for your lunch. Thank you very much to Anthony and Julie. And,